Great. Good morning, Council. Thanks for everything working and being on time. We appreciate it. If there are any technical difficulties as we proceed, just holler or make universal hand signals, whatever suits you best. With that, Marshall, will you call our third case?
Yes, calling case A21-1303 in the matter of the welfare of the child of JLW and CW parents.
All right. And Ms. Carlson, if you want to proceed, and just both of you, as you know, we post audio recordings of the argument. And so if you would just introduce yourselves first as you begin your argument. And Ms. Carlson, you have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal. And Ms. Scher, as you well know, you have 15 minutes in between. All right, go ahead, Ms. Carlson.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the court. My name is Ann Carlson, and I represent Appellant Mother, JLW. Appellant Mother is asking that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating her parental rights because the order does not contain findings that adequately conform with the statutory criteria to terminate parental rights pursuant to any of the statutory bases pled. The district court issued an order that outlines a long history of mother's struggles with chemical dependency, as well as her struggles as a victim of domestic violence. The court decision fails to focus on the conditions that exist at the time of the trial, August of 2021. At that time, mother had demonstrated more than 3 months of sobriety. She was on the right path to complying with everything that the agency had asked her to do. She had ended a relationship with the father, and the record would indicate that largely the reason that the child was removed from her care was because she had a somewhat codependent relationship with an abusive man who was the father of her child. In this case, the court made a finding that all of the statutory bases are, I believe it was technically distinct, but substantively the same. This is not correct. The four bases that are pled are all unique to each other, and the court is required to make clear and specific findings that conform with a statutory basis for termination of parental rights. Starting with failure.
Ms. Carlson, before you go on, one of the arguments, and you were about to make it, I suspect too, in your brief, is that the court didn't make findings as to what conditions existed at the time a child is taken out of the home. And yet, when I look at the memorandum of the court, the judge was specifically identifying the three main areas. One is the not protecting them from abuse, but the judge seemed satisfied that one was resolved, and then went on to chemical dependency and then the mental health issues. And even in the chemical dependency, the court acknowledged what you just raised now and in the brief too, that she had some months of sobriety right before the trial, but then went through her whole history of chemical dependency, and from that summarized that she wasn't confident by clear and convincing evidence that she would maintain sobriety, and then goes into the mental health. What I'm not quite fully understanding is why would those sorts of findings not be sufficient when we review for an abuse of discretion, a statutory basis being present?
Thank you. And respectfully, Your Honor, I would say that when the court has to make a finding regarding what is the condition that exists at the time of the trial, speculating about the future potential for relapse does not conform with what's happening at the time of the trial. The purpose of the rules is to strengthen family ties and remove children only when their safety and welfare cannot otherwise be safeguarded. And in this case, we had a mother who demonstrated a willingness to attend treatment, to stop using. It seems that commitment was perhaps impeded when this case went to trial for the first time in March of 2021. However, following that trial, Mother returned to her path on the straight and narrow, and was on that path at the time that the district court issued its order terminating her parental rights. I would also argue that the court is looking to the future. This court is asking me about the district court's, what I would call speculation of Mother's potential to use again in the future. And that my reading of these four statutes would be that that neglected and in foster care, as well as a neglect of parental duties, are statutes that look to the past. And specifically, a neglect of parental duties would be that the mother failed to provide clothing, education, or other necessary care for the child's welfare, and that the record is absent of evidence that the child was not adequately cared for prior to her removal. That mother was the victim of domestic abuse, that did happen, and that is unfortunate. And mother overcame being the victim of domestic abuse. And by the time the case went to trial, she reached a point where she demonstrated that she was had severed ties with the father in this matter and did not want to continue to have a relationship with him. And was at the time in a relationship with someone who was very supportive of her sobriety. So that issue had been resolved. But
Ms. Carlson, I don't mean to interrupt your discussion of the record because it's so important to our review. And if you want to return to it, feel free. But I do have a question. I just want to make sure I get a chance to ask. And before I ask it, I just want to be clear that point you're just making right now, mother's decision to end the relationship with the father and the abuser. It's obviously very important and recognized by the district court as a tremendous accomplishment on her part and something that was obviously difficult to do. And secondly, as to her sobriety, you know, at the time of the second trial, that also was a significant change. And she had taken steps by the second trial, such as getting a job and an apartment, that were things that she hadn't been able to do before, or at least not recently. So here's the trouble for me is I appreciate your point that the district court doesn't separately analyze the statutory grounds. But if we focus our attention on the ones that you just mentioned with the neglect, which would look to the past, as you said, a parent's failure, in this case, the mother's failure to comply with her duties as a parent to protect a child. It seems to me that the district court's decision, you know, on pages 24, 25, 26, get very specific about mother's inability as a result, unfortunately, of her traumatic brain injury, her cognitive impairment, her ongoing mental health issues, which are very complicated, that parenting is challenging for her. And the district court does reach the finding, conclusion, determination on page 26, based on the totality of the record, the court finds that the mother lacks the ability to provide the minor child with parenting that will meet the child's enhanced needs. And again, the judge has made very specific findings about what are this child's special needs. And the child's need for stability. It goes on from there, but it specifically mentions that with mother's depression and TBI mean that she cannot provide that for this child. So I don't see where you address that in your brief, and I could have missed it. Please address it here, because I think that's the crux of the district court's analysis.
I appreciate the court giving me an opportunity to address this, and I do believe it was addressed in the responsive brief. And actually, I believe the responsive brief attributed mother's lack of insight. To be clear, what I wrote in the principal brief is not indicative of mother's insight into her own mental health or chemical dependency. It needs to be noted that mother did not herself write the appellant brief in this matter. So I'm troubled that there was any indication that her lack of insight would be indicated by my argument here. Your Honor, the court is well aware that for the court to terminate parental rights on the basis that a parent has or struggles with mental health issues, there needs to be specific behavior that affects the parent-child relationship or some specific symptoms that manifest.
So, Ms. Carlson, I didn't read it, but look at the top of page 26. The judge makes specific findings about this child's special needs and that mother will likely be unable to provide them in light of all of the information and evidence the judge has received on mother's limitations. And secondly, mother's pattern of lying specifically to the county and the disregarding of advice mean that her capacity, which has been again documented as limited, I'm very sad to say, that her capacity is an issue because she insists on making her own decisions and she does not rely on the guidance of others. So I think those are very specific findings and I just need you to address them. Thank you.
Brief moment, Your Honor. I do have an eye on the clock here. Your Honor, to me in reading these findings, what I see is a great deal of speculation and generalizations. Mother has not accepted the assistance of the agency in addressing all of its concerns. The agency does not always know what's best for families. The government does not always know what's best for families. And in this case, I understand and I get from the court's record that there is some indication that part of the reason that the court did grant the agency's request to terminate parental rights following the second trial was because there was this resistance, as this court identifies, to accepting the assistance of the agency. A parent's relationship with social services is not indicative of the parent's ability to provide proper parental care to the child. I believe that this is a case where it showed that although there was some resistance, it was also moving in the correct direction, the direction of child being returned to mother's care. But there was a relationship that was damaged following the first trial. And I believe that the relationship between social services and mother simply didn't repair after social services failed to meet its burden at the trial in March of 2021.
Doesn't it go beyond that to kind of her lack of ability to be honest if she relapses in the future, to be honest about what she's done? And can't the court look at the past insofar as to say, yes, I mean, she's done a good job and she's maintained sobriety and I sympathize. I mean, it's, you know, addiction is a terrible thing to try to overcome. Domestic abuse is, I don't want to take up your time here, but can't the court look at that and say, geez, she doesn't have much likelihood of success. We're dealing with a very young child who's doing well with a relative foster placement. Mom can and should be part of her life going forward, but I just don't think mom's going to in the best position to take care of this kid going forward, and then she makes fine, obviously have to meet the statute, but can't the court look at that and say, based on this pattern, I'm not convinced, even though she's done a great job the last few months.
Your Honor, my argument is that looking at the potential behaviors of mother when we're looking to the future, that's speculation. So I understand that the district court made an analysis based on the past, and my position or mother's position, we are asking that this court would find that this court's order is inadequate because it fails to differentiate the statutory reasons for a termination of parental rights, and it fails to make adequate findings that conform with the statute. I should not have to guess as to what the specific behavior is that prevents the mother from being able to have the child returned to her care. That is why it is of critical importance with an order that is as grave and weighty as a termination of parental rights order, that anyone who reads it be able to understand exactly which statutory bases have been proven by clear and convincing evidence, and if any, which statutory bases the agency failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence. And in reading this court's order, although I understand that the court has a number of concerns regarding mother's behavior following the first trial and mother's resistance to work with the agency in the immediate after effects of the first trial, ultimately, at the time of the second trial, she was doing everything that she could to have the child returned to her care, and she had made substantial progress. So I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating mother's parental rights on the basis that the district court failed to make findings that adequately conform with the statute. A finding that conforms with the statute is of the utmost importance in a termination of parental rights order, and these findings simply do not conform adequately. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Ms. Scher, go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Kathleen Scher. I'm an assistant county attorney in Otter Tail County, and I represent the Otter Tail County Department of Human Services, the respondent in this case. As the mother has argued a lot during oral argument and also in the brief, a big basis of that was that the findings were not sufficient by the court. But the mother fails to point to really any case law or any statutory provision that says that the court's order itself was not sufficient. The court does make several findings, as this court has pointed out, that does particular findings that allow this court to effectually review that court's order to see that the provisionary statutes are met. There's nothing in the case law or in the rules or statutes itself that order that the court must set out those provisions in a numbered fashion. In fact, the rules itself do dictate that the court merely needs to do a memorandum that does support or lay out the facts and opinions that the court relied on, and that those meet the statutory provisions. And the court has done that in this case. In fact, I would argue that the court in this case very clearly shows that they have a good understanding of the history of this case and a good understanding of the exhibits and have reviewed that information as well as took under consideration all three of the major trials that occurred in this case. Additionally, I would point the court to the first order that the court made that in fact denied the agency's petition, that the court did make particular findings in that case as well, laying out the court's concerns as to how the agency did not meet its burden. And in the final order issued in September of 2021, the court addresses those in turn, saying the agency's now met its burden. The concerns and the speculation that the agency had back in the March trial have been satisfied by the court because those things have come true. Additionally, the court heavily relies on both the parental capacity evaluation of Dr. Kathleen Scher, which the court addressed both in the first order and then in the second order, shows that the things that Dr. Scher was concerned about have in fact come true. Finally, the court indicates that it relies heavily on the neuropsychological exam that was conducted in March of 2021 that was prior to the first trial, but before we had that result back. At the time of the second trial, that evaluation was back, and that evaluation supported both Dr. Shara's concerns, as well as really shows that that the mother has these cognitive impairments that are not going to go away, and that would significantly impair her ability to parent.
If I could interrupt for a minute, though, so she's got a disability from this TBI and
yes,
maybe other mental health issues, but you can't yank a kid away just because somebody's got a disability, right? So can you help me out there? How do we deal with that problem?
Yes. And while the court can't and shouldn't terminate parental rights based on a mental impairment itself, if it goes to the parent's ability to actually take care of that child and sufficiently parent, it would go to the parent's ability to keep that child safe. And I think the court makes ties in both of its orders that go to the fact that, I would say as well, the neurological evaluation itself also ties into this, that the mother's cognitive impairments in conjunction with her chemical dependency struggles, as well as her depression, do all go to her basis of her inability to appropriately care for this child going forward. And one of the examples that the court uses and the neurological or the neuropsychological evaluation uses as well is that mother has difficulty even handling a part-time job, saying she's exhausted following a part-time job. This is a four, almost five-year-old child with special needs. That in itself is a challenge, but in addition, this mother has cognitive disabilities. She has chemical dependency, things that she's struggling with. And the court just doesn't believe that going forward, she's going to be able to meet that child's needs. The court also addressed that with the mother's ability to or inability to make appropriate decisions to keep the child safe. And that is one of the reasons that the child was initially removed from the home. Both domestic abuse and the mother's inability to protect the child from witnessing that abuse, as well as suffering the abuse on her own. And going forward, the court believes that the mother is not going to be able to do that, that she continues to be unable to make appropriate decisions to keep the child safe.
Just to clarify quickly, you're not saying, I don't think, that this district court found the mother would not keep the child safe from domestic abuse by the father. Because I think we do.
No, I am not saying that at all.
Okay. So when you say not keep the child safe, what is the finding that the judge is making as to mother's mental health, the TBI and other mental health issues, cognitive impairment? So what is the mother not keeping the child safe if it's not domestic violence?
Well, and I believe that the court is saying is she's not concerned about the father itself. Father has been out of the picture. And in fact, father was incarcerated for much of this case. And the agency would argue that that was in fact what broke this pattern of domestic abuse, is that father was out of the mother's life for a significant period of time. And the record would reflect that prior to that, under the protective supervision case, mother lied to the agency and had maintained a relationship with this person that was not a safe person to be around. At the time of the first trial, the court also had concerns about mother's new relationship. The new male in the life had significant issues as well, was also struggling with chemical dependency and had a short period of sobriety. And the mother made some very instinctual and abrupt decisions, changing her entire discharge planning to actually.
Well, before you spend a lot of time on that though, don't you want to get to the conclusion the district court made about this new relationship? Because I mean, we have read the record here. So I think for your analysis, you really need to go to the judge's conclusion on that. The judge found there was no evidence of abuse in this new relationship. And then in fact, in the new relationship, he's acting, I believe, as her sponsor for the purposes of sobriety and has maintained his own sobriety. So again, would you please address the safety concerns as found by this court and link them to the mental health
absolutely
issue?
And Judge, what the court really got to was that the court had concerns about the mother's ability to have the capacity to make some of these decisions to keep the child safe, since she's demonstrated that even when she's given advice or guidance, or even when she has resources to help her make those decisions, she's ignored those resources. And one of the big things that the court relies on is going back to the sobriety piece, that even though the agency continued to be involved after the first trial, the agency continued to provide support. She had treatment that was providing support. She had a therapist that was providing support. She didn't rely on any of these things and instead continued to lie to the agency about sobriety or her lack thereof. And I think the court is using that safety factor as looking at these things, that even with support, even with places to turn to, mother is not making decisions that are appropriate to keep this child safe. One of the examples that the court does use as well is in the first order back from March is that when the mother was provided an unsupervised parenting time for a birthday party for the child, she broke all the rules. She allowed contact with this person that the therapist had said, no, the child's not ready for this. The child has struggled with male influences in her life, largely due to that domestic abuse background. And mother ignored that. She ignored the request of the agency and she ignored the recommendations of the child's therapist and allowed contact with this male. And I think that had significant impact on the child's mental health and the child's prior trauma going forward.
Ms. Scherr,
yes.
As you were speaking, it reminded me of a perhaps a nagging issue I have, and that is that you're referring to the prior trial and the order, but of course the end result was there was not clear and convincing evidence of a need for termination. And then my understanding is that her failed to abstain issue shortly thereafter is what led to your county's motion for either a amended finding or new trial. So now we have a new trial, and now we know in the new trial that, and not many months later, there's sobriety shown for about 3 months leading up to that. And the positive development with regard to the father and protecting the child. So what do you, from the court's findings in the memo, what would we focus on after there's not a basis for termination and she's doing pretty well chemically dependently leading up to it, that is the best statutory basis, which facts would support the best statutory basis given that time period, if you understand my concern. It's an odd procedural issue we don't typically see. And yet there's a lot of positives during that interim.
And Judge, I would actually point to two. I would point to the neglected and in foster care and the Palpebrean foot itself. And I would point to that because one of the big factors that the court does rely in that second order is evidence that the mother presented herself or did engage in herself. And that's that neuropsychological evaluation that was finally done just prior to the first trial, with the report being done in time for the second trial. And that evaluation itself really does go back and support the parental capacity evaluation that was done by Dr. Shara. And the court had a lot of questions in the first trial, since that evaluation had been done almost a year prior to that, as to whether that those concerns of Dr. Shara were still prevalent. And the court said in the first case that because it was so long ago, we don't know that that's still a basis. Mom had a period of sobriety and it's she seems to be doing well. But by the time we get to the second trial, we've now had this, again, more recent neuropsychological that raises a lot of the same concerns that Dr. Shara did in her parental capacity evaluation. And we have this relapse of chemical dependency. We have this reoccurrence of mother not reaching out for her supports. And directly lying to the agency and her treatment providers. And so Judge, I would argue that cognitive impairment, her struggles with mental health in conjunction with her struggles for sobriety, all together do provide a definite parental duty. Her inability to keep this child safe, her inability to appropriately parent, based on that combination of struggles that mother has. Now, I certainly think that the court did distinguish that if each of these things on its own were an issue, perhaps the county wouldn't meet its burden. But in conjunction, these things make it impossible for this mother to be able to appropriately protect this child going forward. I would, however, argue that I do think that the other statutory bases, as the court has found, are met and are supported by the record. And one of the things that the agency did bring up in its brief, as well as argue to the court, and the court found this, is that mother continues to fail to recognize her own shortcomings. Even now, when we're looking at 3 years after the agency's initial intervention with the protective supervision, mothers failed to recognize that her chemical dependency was a large basis for the court or for the removal of the child in the first place and for the protective supervision case. And mother's continued struggle in conjunction with her cognitive impairment does impact the child and has led to the child's trauma and her ability to, or has caused her to have special needs, I guess is the best way to put it. I would point out that the court's order also refers to the opinion of the child's therapist, which the court took testimony from at the first trial, but also referred to in the second, under the second trial, that the therapist was still recognizing that this child was not ready for unsupervised parenting time. There's a significant bond. The agency doesn't dispute that. The mother and the child have a significant bond, but the mother does not have the ability to protect this child or parent appropriately. And I would respectfully ask that the court does affirm the district court's decision and does confirm this termination of parental rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scher. Ms. Carlson, 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you. And for the record, this is Ann Carlson, and I represent appellant mother JLW. Judge Bratbold, I did have an opportunity to more thoroughly review the district court's findings regarding mother's mental health. And I'm troubled that ultimately these findings to me seem to be general findings that mother struggles as a parent, struggles with various issues. And certainly the statutory requirement can't be, we need to make sure that children are in homes where their parents are have no struggles with parenting. I think that all parents struggle with exhaustion. I understand that this parent is under the microscope, but parenting is inherently difficult. It's a full-time job, and the standard is not who's a perfect parent. It's, is the child able to be safely returned to the care of the parent? There's a very strong statutory presumption that the natural parent is fit and suitable to have the child in their care. With this case, the question is, what condition exists at the time of the trial? Not what conditions led to, I'm disinterested in what happened when the child was under the protective supervision of the agency, because that was quite some time before the trial. I'm concerned about what was going on at the time of the trial, and that's what the case law is concerned with as well. Respondent indicates that I failed to adequately outline the case law that would support any of my arguments. First, the case law that supports that there needs to be a clear and specific finding that conform with the statutory basis is in the matter of the welfare of Zerbe, or in re Zerbe. The case law that would indicate that there needs to be a causal link between the parent's chemical dependency and their inability to provide proper parental care is in re welfare of TAA. The case law that indicates that the mental illness in and of itself is not a basis for a termination of parental rights, but you actually have to look to the behavior of the parent and whether that behavior is detrimental to the child's welfare is in the matter of the welfare of kid. And to support my previous argument that the government doesn't always know what's best for children, I would look to in the matter of the welfare of JLO, that's a 2019 unpublished opinion written by Judge Rodenberg. There's a lot of speculation here, but what there isn't is clear and convincing evidence that at the time the matter went to trial in 2021, in August of 2021, the child could not safely be placed with the mother. And this accumulation of mother has struggled with this and mother has struggled with that, when a record indicates that mother is at a point where she is accepting assistance from the agency, it doesn't follow that a termination of parental rights is justified. The court makes findings that I did not address on appeal, although I am concerned with that this child needs to continue to have a relationship with this mother, and that a termination of parental rights is inappropriate in this instance because the child benefits from having this ongoing relationship with the mother. I found this to be a very unusual finding in a termination of parental rights order, because ultimately it seems the finding goes to the reason not to terminate parental rights. If the child is best suited by having an ongoing relationship with the mother, then it would seem that the correct outcome would have been to continue to provide services that mother was beginning to, rather, I won't say beginning to, that mother was complying with. There was resistance. Yes, there were struggles. Yes. However, by the time the matter went to trial, she was addressing all of the concerns that the court and the agency had. She had obtained full-time employment, safe and stable housing, and was in a relationship with someone that, as far as this record indicates, would be a safe care provider and a safe partner for the mother. This record is simply, rather, I should say, the court's findings simply do not adequately address the statutory criteria for a termination of parental rights. And because they fail to adequately conform with the statutes as pled, I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating parental rights. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, no, thank you. Any further questions from the panel? No. All right. Thank you both very much for your briefing and your argument. We appreciate it. The case is now submitted, and we will provide our opinion within the expedited time frame accorded these kinds of important cases. All right, and with that, that terminates the oral portion of our calendar, and we will now address our non-oral cases. So thank you all very much.